In Household, 100 Years Ago, written by Anthony Mile. A Victorian Christmas.
Thursday, December the 23rd, 1879. Dear Tom, we received your letter yesterday, and Father read it out to us after dinner while Mama was sewing and Edward was climbing all over the furniture with twigs of holly to decorate the pictures. It made me sad to think of you all those miles away and separated from us at Christmas. But how exciting it all sounds. Mama and I felt quite giddy to hear of your exploits, and Edward has made up his mind definitely to be a soldier when he grows up. We've had such snow in the last week, you can't imagine. Old Jones the poulterer just managed to get through to us yesterday with the turkey, which will make a change from our usual goose. He says many more people are ordering turkeys this year. It has become quite the fashion. Poor Alice has been worrying about it for days, and she has been buried in her receipt books ever since it arrived. She says she never had to cook so huge a bird in her last place. Old Jones was given the usual glass of hot toddy and a mince pie. Alice has had to make hundreds of pies this year, as their reputation has spread, and we have had an unending stream of carol singers. Even Father's habit of bringing them into the house and making them sing while he plays the piano doesn't seem to have put them off.
Footsteps he trod where the snow lay dinted. It was in the merry sod which the saint had printed. The poor Christian men be sure with the rank possessing. He who now will bless the poor, show yourselves thy blessing.
Well done. I think we've all earned some of this toddy. Oh. And mince pies, eh, boys?
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Come in.
Oh, beg pardon, sir, but the postman just delivered these.
Thank you, Sarah. More cards and a parcel for Lucy. What a Christmas. Would you see that Alice gives the postman a mince pie?
Certainly, sir.
And now, what about a verse of the first Noel before you go?
Oh, yes.
Cousins arrive tomorrow. Only Elizabeth and George this year, as Maud and Rose are going to spend Christmas with the aunts. We have been very busy, though, getting ready for them, cleaning rooms and airing beds. Edward has made the decorations his own responsibility. The hall and dining room look like the corners of a forest, and he has made a lovely wreath for the front door. Somehow wreaths make me feel sad, even at Christmas. They always remind me of poor little Etty. She would have been 11 this year. And how she loved Christmas. Do you remember the doll Mama gave her that last year? I found it up in the attic the other day, beautifully packed up in a box with tissue paper and with some dried flowers. Mama must have done it. I know she still grieves for Etty very much, although she doesn't talk about it. Oh, well. At least the little darling is in heaven now and past all suffering. But I was telling you about Edward and his decorations. Mama and I were so busy with the other jobs that we didn't notice he had disappeared upstairs. You'll never guess what the little devil was doing, putting holly down Cousin Elizabeth's bed. Thank goodness I found it. Do you remember the apple pie bed he made for her last year? I don't think she will ever quite forgive any of us for that. Edward has grown so since you last saw him and has become quite a little man in his new breeches. Mama says he has been a great help to her sending out the cards. So many people are sending them now, and we have almost 30 on the mantelpiece this year. It seems extraordinary to think that a few years ago no one sent Christmas cards at all. We've had some really beautiful ones. Aunt Emily's is my favourite. It opens up to show a charming scene of angels at the Nativity. I think Mama said it was made in Germany. There seem to be a lot of German cards around, and they're so elaborate. I am going to stick them into an album when they are taken down. They are far too lovely to be thrown away. Of course, the musical evening on Christmas Eve has taken a lot of rehearsing. Last Wednesday, Father was taking Edward through his song. It was all Mama and I could do to keep straight faces.
Come on now, Edward. Once again, from the beginning.
Yes, Father.
Underneath the gaslight's glitter stands a little fragile girl. Heedless of the night winds bitter as they round about her whirl. While the hundreds pass unheeding in the evening's waning hours, still she cries with tearful pleading, "Won't you buy my pretty flowers?" Therefore, many sad and weary in this present world of ours, crying every night so dreary, "Won't you buy my pretty flowers?"
Oh, well done, Ed. Very good.
Mother, do I have to sing?
Now, Edward, it's Christmas. Everyone must do something.
Yes, but Mother, Tom never did it.
Tom always takes part. And would, if you were here.
Come on now, my dear. Let's hear your new song. We ought to practice it. Oh. Where's the music?
In the piano stool, I think, on top. It's printed in the Christmas number of the Illustrated London News.
Ah, yes, here it is. An English Christmas Home.
Yes, that's it.
Yes, now let's see. Yes.
Merry Christmas bells, all hail with happy gladness to the well-known chant that swells. We list the pealing anthem chord, we hear the midnight strain, and love the tidings that proclaim old Christmas once again. But there must be a melody, a purer, deeper sound, a rich keynote whose echo runs through all the music round. Let kindly voices ring beneath your roof or valley's doom, for these alone are carol chimes that bless a Christmas home. Then fill once more from bounty's store red wine or nut brown foam, and drink to honest hearts within an English Christmas.
Excellent, my dear.
Yes, that was beautiful.
Lovely. Delightful song. Are you going to sing something else?
Yes, but nothing else new. Elizabeth is so good, I shall have to stick to songs I know really well.
Cousin Elizabeth? Oh, why does she always have to come here for Christmas?
Edward, remember your cousin Elizabeth's mother is dead and her father is abroad. Yes. We must be charitable and try to make her and George feel quite at home. We are their family at Christmas.
Yeah, it's not George, sir. He's all right, but Elizabeth. Oh, she's so superior.
Remember what I said, Edward. We must always try to help those less fortunate than ourselves. And besides, Elizabeth was very kind and helpful to your mother when your little sister was so ill.
Yes.
Lucy, my dear, what about your piece? Perhaps you ought to run over it?
Yes, Father, but, well, perhaps we could tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
I must finish this sampler tonight or I shall never have all my presents ready.
I just managed to escape having to play. But I'm dreading having to perform in front of Cousin Elizabeth. I would rather face a regiment of your Pathans, or whatever you call them. This morning, Mama asked me to help Alice in the kitchen, and we prepared the stuffing for the turkey and some oyster patties.
Roll your puff paste 6 times. Cut with a round tin cutter about 5 inches in diameter. Oh, fetch me the cutter, would you please, Miss Lucy?
Yes, Alice.
It's in the third drawer of the dresser. Now, what have we got next? Glaze with the white of an egg, then press a smaller round cutter. Oh, the other one too, please, my dear.
Yes.
In the centre, enough to cut the paste slightly. This will form the cover to your patty.
Here they are, Alice. Can I help with the cutting out?
Thank you, Miss Lucy. That would be kind. Oh, there seems to be so much to do just now. And I'm sure I don't know about that turkey. I never saw so big a bird in my life.
I'm sure it'll be fine, Alice. Mr. Jones says he sold ever so many this year.
Well, I don't know what's wrong with a nice plump goose, I'm sure. They were always good enough before. Newfangled bird.
Never mind, Alice. Now, what does it say? Bake by a brisk fire. Mm. When done, cut out the covers with a sharp penknife.
Oh.
Have some oysters and chopped button mushrooms ready, warmed in a bechamel sauce. Fill the patties and serve very hot. Well, we shan't fill them today, shall we, Alice? Oh,
bless you, no, dear. They're for tomorrow evening. But we'll get the pastry cooked, and I'll just get the range stocked a bit.
Alice? What was it like? I mean, your last place.
Colonel Beaumont?
Yes.
That were a lovely house. And the Colonel was a real gentleman. He weren't well off, mind, but kindness itself. More can be said for that sister of his'n.
Miss Beaumont?
That's her. She was that mean. Wouldn't give you the time of day. And always complaining about this and that. She were a real tyrant, and there weren't many missed her when she was taken.
Oh, Alice, that's a dreadful thing to say.
Dreadful? Oh, no, it's no less than the truth.
But Father says... Alice, your patties.
Oh, Lord, Miss Lucy, now look what you made me do. Oh, my poor pastry.
After that, I thought I'd better see if I could help Mama. She's been busy making pen wipers and pincushions out of scraps from Sarah's mending basket. So I gave her a hand with those and finished my sampler for Cousin Elizabeth. Do you remember the tapestry cushion cover she made for Mama last year? And the inscription, "A little gift by friendship's hand conferred is often to the costliest gem preferred." Edward said that when it came to him, he'd prefer a costly gem. Poor Edward. He really does mean well, but he's still so full of mischief. Mama read to us last night from Little Women, that novel which Uncle Toby brought back from America. One of the girls in the story says, "Christmas won't be Christmas without any presents." And Edward said that our Christmas wouldn't be the same without you, which made Mama cry a bit, and all of us felt very sad. I do hope that you will have a happy Christmas, although this letter won't reach you in time, I'm afraid. But we shall all be thinking of you, and everyone is so proud to have a real soldier in the family. I shall write again in a few days when the excitement has died down a little. Mama has asked me to send you the enclosed handkerchiefs, which we bought in London. We both hope that you will find them useful, and I hope that you will recognize in the embroidery the hand of your devoted sister, Lucy.
December the 30th, 1879. My dear Lucy, how I miss you all. We've had a rough time of it here, being sniped at from behind every rock and trying to keep moving. Even when we've been safe, we've been pretty uncomfortable. I suppose that's why Christmas this year came as rather a shock. To begin with, apart from letters from home and conversations among the men, there was little to remind one that it was Christmas at all. We spent Christmas Eve in bivouacs by the Cardi stream, a few hours' ride from Jalalabad. When we arrived in Jalalabad at 11 o'clock on Christmas morning, we found the main street of the camp freshly swept and the flagstaff decorated with holly. We could hardly believe our eyes. The regimental band joined in the merriment by playing carols and even Home Sweet Home. I must say, it made me miss you all even more, and I could almost hear Mother singing it, as she does every Christmas Eve. After church parade, and they'd even managed to decorate the church with greenery, we went in to dinner in the officer's mess. There was no beautiful china, napkins, flowers, or tablecloths. Someone had done his best with more greenery, but otherwise the table was bare, except for tin plates and mugs. But the chef surpassed himself. The menu consisted of soup julienne, whitebait, which had been caught in the Kabul River, cutlets with mushrooms, chicken, ham, roast beef, roast saddle of mutton, boiled brisket of beef, boiled leg of mutton and caper sauce, chicken curry, a lemon jelly, blancmange, apricot tart, plum pudding, grilled sardines, cheese fritters, and cheese dessert. I wrote a list just after dinner so that I wouldn't leave anything out. Can you believe it, Lucy? Stuck out here miles from civilization with a genius for a chef. After the dinner, the Queen's health was drunk in champagne, and then there were two further toasts. The health of the caterer, loud cheers, and absent friends. As you can imagine, everyone raised his glass jovially. But there was something like a tear in some of the bravest eyes in the room when we all thought of loved ones at home. After dinner, we all sang carols around the fire until it was quite late. We moved on the next day, feeling both sadder and yet more light-hearted in a way. We've been promised letters from home next week, and I'm so looking forward to hearing from you. All over Christmas, I could think of nothing but the family, and last year when we were all together. But enough from me. I am no letter writer, as you know. I just long to hear news of your Christmas. How were the cousins? And did Elizabeth sing well?
Saturday, the 30th of January, 1880. Dear Tom, your letter arrived this morning, and we were so relieved to hear of your safety after the news from India. Everything seems very quiet here now, and it seems ages ago that I last wrote to you. Our Christmas was the same as always. On Christmas Eve, we met Cousin Elizabeth and Cousin George at the railway station, and Father drove us all home in the wagonette. We'd hardly got indoors when it started to snow again. But Sarah had lit all the fires, and Edward had decorated the Christmas tree with all kinds of baubles and little candles, so that everything seemed very warm and welcoming inside the house. Alice's oyster patties were a great success at dinner, and afterwards we all went through to the drawing room for music. Cousin Elizabeth sang first.
I cannot spin tonight.
Oh, Elizabeth, that was beautiful. Such charming sentiments and so exquisitely sung.
Oh, thank you, Aunt. My singing teacher has been pleased with my progress this year and says I should soon be able to take solo roles with our oratorio society.
Oh. Ah, that would certainly be an experience. Did the society give Messiah again this year?
The society gives Messiah every Christmas. Ah. And I am pleased to say there was not a seat to be had in the hall.
Very gratifying, very gratifying. Your aunt and I were fortunate enough to obtain tickets for the Handel Festival in the Crystal Palace in 1856, I think it was.
No, dear, it was 57.
Oh, well, 57 then. A huge organ had been built especially. There seemed to be almost as many singers as listeners. It was rumoured that the Queen herself was to attend.
A friend of mine, Major Fielding, is an equerry at court and tells me that even now Her Majesty hardly ever appears. However, her musical tastes are very similar to my own. We both value Handel's music above all others. At least that's what Major Fielding says. Major Fielding says that Her Majesty still often plays Handel on the piano forte, and that she loves to accompany her ladies-in-waiting in sacred songs.
Oh,
especially in extracts from Messiah. Major Fielding...
Cousin Elizabeth, you really must give us another song. I know Father is just dying to play the piano, and we are seldom privileged to hear so beautiful a voice.
Oh, Cousin Lucy, you flatter me. But surely we should hear you play.
So then, of course, I had to play. I was as bad as usual,
And to make things worse, I kept catching Cousin Elizabeth looking at me in that horrid, superior way she has.
How clever you are.
Thank you.
My singing does not allow me nearly enough time for piano playing. In fact, my teacher was almost angry with me last month for taking a whole week to learn a Beethoven sonata. Do you know any of the sonatas? They have so much more depth than any of these parlor pieces we hear so often, don't you think? Major Fielding agrees with me that Beethoven is unsurpassed as a composer for the piano. He loves to hear me play and, of course, sing. Major Fielding is such a cultured man, so fond of music, with such a magnificent baritone voice. Oh, if only one could do everything. My piano teacher says I could have been a concert pianist if only I could have devoted the time to it. But since poor dear Mama was taken, I've been so busy looking after George and running the house.
Talking of George, where is he?
Oh, I believe he and Edward are still in the dining room swapping stories. Oh, heavens, what was that? Oh, Lucy, do go and fetch the boys. Tell them they're missing all the fun.
Very well, Mama. But it sounds as if they're having even more fun in the dining room.
And now, my dear, you must give us Home Sweet Home.
Oh, yes, my dear. The music is on the piano.
Ah, yes, sir. Children, children,
no.
Your mother is about to sing.
Oh, oh, sorry, Uncle Augustus.
Uncle Augustus, Aunt Mary, George has got a recitation.
Oh, gosh, serves you right.
Now, George. George will recite England, My England by W.E. Henley.
What have I done for you, England, my England? What is there I would not do, England, my own? With your glorious eyes austere, as the Lord were walking near, whispering terrible things and dear as the song on your bugles blown, England, round the world on your bugles blown. Where shall the watchful sun, England, my England, match the masterwork you've done, England, my own? When shall he rejoice again, such a breed of mighty men has come forward, 1 to 10, to the song on your bugles blown, England, down the years on your bugles blow. Oh. Mother of ships whose might, England, my England, is the fierce old sea's delight, England, my own, chosen daughter of the Lord, spouse in chief of the ancient sword, there's the menace of the word in the song on your bugles blown, England, out of heaven on your bugles blown.
George, that was splendid. Well done.
Major Fielding chose the poem and coaches George in recitation. Indeed. He has such a good taste in poetry, and George so enjoys learning with him. Do you not, George?
Yes, Elizabeth. May Edward and I go back to the dining room now, please?
Well, I think we've time for just one carol before bed. Perhaps, oh, Lucy, you'll accompany us all on the piano?
Yes, Father.
What shall it be? I think we'd better let Edward choose. After all, he is the youngest.
Yes, thank you, sir. While shepherds watch their flocks by night.
Very well, Edward.
I don't like
them. Lucy, here's the music.
Thank you, Father.
While shepherds watch their flocks by night, all see dead on the ground, the angel of the Lord came down, and glory shone around. Fear not, said he, for mighty dread and seize their troubled mind. Their tidings of great joy I bring to you and all mankind.
Well, after a second carol, the boys went to bed. Edward was very excited, although he pretends not to believe in Father Christmas. Mama hung his stocking next to George's on the mantelpiece, and I helped Father to fill them with toys and sweets and nuts. Do you remember when we used to hang our stockings up? I was never big enough to reach the mantelpiece, and we were always a bit afraid of getting too near the fire. Edward is just the same, and Mama had to lift him up. Cousin Elizabeth went to bed straight away, but Father and I sat up in front of the yule log for a few minutes and talked about last Christmas, and about you, half across the world. Christmas morning was all bustle. George and Edward were down opening their stockings before even Alice was up. I felt quite the lady coming down to breakfast at 8:30, although the dining room was already alive with clockwork toys and tin soldiers.
Look, Ed, look, I've got a soldier! And it's Elizabeth.
Good morning, Elizabeth. Lucy, happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
I trust you both slept well.
Yes, thank you, Mama.
I'm afraid not. I was awakened in the middle of the night by a curious pricking sensation in my feet, which worried me until daylight.
Oh, dear.
It wasn't until I stripped back the bed this morning that I found a substantial holly branch at the bottom of the bed.
Edward, do you know anything of this?
Well,
go to your room, Edward, and wait for me there. Edward, to your room.
Well, Father, it's Christmas.
Don't be too hard on him, my dear. After all, it is Christmas Day.
Christmas Day or not, Edward must learn to behave. He shall apologize, Elizabeth, I assure you.
Oh, please do not be too hard on him, Uncle. It is really of no consequence. I'm sure he meant no real harm.
Elizabeth, dear, do help yourself to some kedgeree.
Thank you, Aunt.
Poor Edward. Father made him apologize to Cousin Elizabeth in front of the whole family before we went to church, and she just stood there smirking. I think she's worse this Christmas than she was last year. Anyhow, we all set out at 10:00. It was quite a trudge through the snow, and my feet got soaked. Edward was still clutching his clockwork engine, which Mama allowed him to bring. He and George walked with me behind the others, and I'm glad to say I was able to cheer him up so that when we arrived he'd quite forgotten about his talking to. We were in good time for the service, but the church was quite full. The organist was playing away, and we all sang lustily. Even Mr. Halliwell looked cheerful and gave his usual Christmas sermon.
But above all, at this Christmas tide, when God has given us the inestimable gift of his only Son, let us remember those less fortunate than ourselves, those for whom Christmas does not mean gifts and joy, but poverty and misery. Let us especially remember the poor in our own streets and villages. Let us remember that against the joy of this one birth must be set the agony of several infant deaths. For this one tiny spirit winging its way towards us meets many hundreds going the other way, some of whom have never shared with their parents the joy of a Christmas. Let us remember them at this time, the bereaved and the distressed, and let us give of our charity, not only material gifts, for man cannot live by bread alone, but also heavenly ones. And one in particular, the joyous invitation of the angels, that we should all hasten to Bethlehem and see this child lying in a manger. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, amen. We shall all sing hymn number 59, O Come All Ye Faithful.
When we arrived home, Sarah had built the fire up into a glorious blaze. Before luncheon, we all opened the presents, which Father had piled up underneath the Christmas tree. There was a toy fort and soldiers for Edward, and a sword for George. Cousin Elizabeth said that she did not approve of warlike toys for children, and that the pugnacious spirit of the French was undoubtedly owing to their having been brought up with too many toy muskets and tin soldiers. She gave Edward a Noah's Ark, with all the animals carved in wood. It really is very splendid, but Edward seems to prefer the fort. For Mama and me, she brought little sewing bags, which she had made herself, and for Father, a pair of thick woolen stockings. Our rhapsodies of delight over these useful gifts were cut short by the dinner gong, and we all went through to find Alice struggling in with the turkey. It really was enormous, and she said it had taken 6 hours to cook, not shrinking at all like a goose does. But I think she was proud of it, and everyone ate heartily. Mama decided not to have so many courses this year, as the turkey was so huge. But we all enjoyed Alice's port jelly, ices, plum pudding, and mince pies, before Father wrapped the table.
Her Majesty, the Queen.
Her Majesty, the Queen!
God bless her.
Lucy, will you call in Alice and Sarah?
Oh, certainly, Father.
Alice! Sarah!
Ah.
Come in!
Oh, thank you, Lucy.
Family and friends, this Christmas, like all our Christmases, has been a great joy to me and to your mother. But there's one person lacking to make the occasion perfect.
Oh, yes, indeed.
I speak, of course, of our son Thomas, who is even now helping, in his own way, to expand our gracious Queen's empire and to bring honour and fame to our country. While we wish most sincerely that he could be with us today, we also recognise that his is a glorious calling, and one far more important than our own wishes at this time. He may be in danger. He may be in discomfort, but the work he is doing is worthy work, and he is worthy of it. I am proud of my son, and I want you all to be proud of him too. Let us raise our glasses and drink to Tom.
Yes, to Tom! Tom!
Tom!
To Tom! Tom!
Lucy, please, would you take your mother to the drawing room?
Yes,
oh,
sir.
Come along, Mama.
Oh.
Please, you mustn't get so upset.
Well, now, boys, what about a game of Snapdragon?
Oh, yes, sir, yes, please!
Edward, you go and fetch the bowl.
Yes, sir.
Alice, could we please have some raisins?
Yes, sir.
And I'll get the brandy.
Uncle Augustus, you think we should? I mean, isn't it rather dangerous?
Nonsense, Elizabeth. Your father and I used to play Snapdragon every Christmas. No harm ever came to us.
Father, here's the bowl.
Put it down here on the table.
And here are the raisins, sir.
Thank you, Alice.
Come along, Sarah. There's washing up to be done.
Now, Brandy. A match. And here he comes with flaming bow. Don't he mean to take his soul? Snip, snap, dragon.
Throw the raisins. Father, throw the raisins.
All right, all right. Take care you don't take too much. Be not greedy in your clutch. Snip, snap, dragon.
Look at the flames. You've got to snatch one of the raisins out of the flames and put it in your mouth like this.
Oh, my dad, you'll get burnt.
No, what? Wait, when I close my mouth, look, the flames go up. Oh,
very good, Edward. George, you have a go.
All right, sir.
Well done. Now, you see, Elizabeth, it's not dangerous at all. Now, you have a go.
Well, all right.
With his glue and lapping tongue, many of you will be stung. Snip, snap.
I would have given anything to have been there. As it was, I could only hear the screams from the drawing room where Mama was recovering her nerves. Apparently, Cousin Elizabeth didn't close her mouth on the raisin, but spat it out, still burning, onto her dress, where it started to singe the lace. Edward rushed for some water at once, making a noise like a fire engine bell, and then threw the whole lot over her, soaking her to the skin. By the time Mama and I got to the dining room, we were just in time to meet a very wet Cousin Elizabeth rushing upstairs.
What on earth's going on?
Elizabeth, she's soaking wet.
We were playing Snapdragon, and she wasn't very good at it. But I don't think she's hurt, thanks to Edward's prompt action. Eh, Edward?
Yes, sir.
Couldn't you find a smaller jug?
No, Father. Alice gave me that one. She got the knives and forks soaking in it.
Oh, oh well, no harm done, I suppose. Lucy, could you go and see if your cousin needs any help?
Certainly, Father. Perhaps I'd better take her a glass of water.
I'll take it!
No, you won't, Edward. Lucy, take her this brandy instead.
Cousin Elizabeth stayed in her room for the rest of the evening and complained of a headache. But apart from that, there were no after effects. I couldn't help feeling, though, that no one was really very sorry for her. She and George left on the train on Boxing Day, and Mama and I started tidying the house up. Father took Edward up to London to see the new Natural History Museum, which is to be open to the public this year. I would have loved to have gone too, but Mama needed my help here. Did I tell you about Mr. Halliwell's new curate? He has asked me to help him with Sunday school classes for the village children, and I should like to, although I find him a bit frightening. He is very tall and has a black beard. What do you think? So we have arrived in the 1880s. What a thought! At least we shall have you back before too long. And then Christmas will be twice as much fun. We really did miss you this year, as you can see, and can't wait for your safe return. Your devoted sister, Lucy.
Coming, Mama.
Rosalind Shanks was Lucy in A Victorian Christmas by Anthony Mile. Father was played by Peter Pratt and Mother was Jenny Lee. Tom, Robin Kermode. Edward, Elizabeth Morgan. Elizabeth, Phillida Nash. And George, Jean England. Alice was Beth Boyd. Sarah, Jane Knowles. And the Reverend Halliwell was Michael Spice. Anthony Mile played the piano. A Victorian Christmas was directed by Graham Gauld, and the editor was Joe Reed.